Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
I was singing this old chant we used to sing. I don't know if any of you remember. From the old timers. Brahma Bole Chaturmukhi. Remember that one? Brahma Bole Chaturmukhi. Krishna Krishna Hare Hare. Mahadeva Panchamukhi. Rama Rama Hare Hare. So Lord Brahma chants with his four mouths, Krishna Krishna, and Lord Shiva chants with his five mouths, Rama Rama. So today we're reading Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 85. Lord Krishna instructs Vasudeva, text 52 through the end of the chapter, which is what, 59, I think? Yes, so eight verses. We'll chant the first one responsively, word meanings. Iti, thus, uktva, speaking, tan, them, samadaya, taking, indrasenena, by Bali Maharaja, pujitao, both honored, punaha, once more, dwaravatim, to Dwaraka, itya, going, matuhu, of their mother, putran, the sons, ayachchatam, they presented. Ityuktva tan samadaya, indrasenena pujitao, punardvaravatim itya, Matu putrana yachyatam ityuktva tan samadaya indrasenena pujitao punadvaravatim itya Matu putrana yachyatam ityuktva tan samadaya indrasenena pujitao punardvaravatim itya Matu putrana yachyatam Ityuktvatam samadaya Indrasenena pujitao Punadvaravatimitya Matuputrana yachyatam Ityuktvatam samadaya Indrasenena pujitao Punadvara dhatimitya Matuputtam samadaya Ladies, Ityuktvatam samadaya Indrasenena pujitao Punardvaravatim itya Matuputrana yachyatam Ityuktva tam samadaya
Indrasena pujita. Punadvara vati mitya. Matuputrana yasitam.
Translation, Shukadeva Goswami continued. After saying this, Lord Krishna and Lord Balaram, having been duly worshipped by Bali Maharaj, took the six sons and returned to Dwaraka, where they presented them to their mother. We can chant together.
Tandrishva balakandevi putrasneha snutastani parishasjhanukam rupya modhya jigrada bhishnashaha.
When she saw her lost children, goddess Devaki felt such affection for them that milk flowed from her breasts. She embraced them and took them onto her lap, smelling their heads again and again.
Apayayat stanam prita sutasparsya parisnutam mohita mayaya vishnor yaya shrishti pravartate.
Lovingly she let her sons drink from her breast, which became wet with milk just by their touch. She was entranced by the same illusory energy of Lord Vishnu that initiates the creation of the universe. Purport. In the opinion of Srila Jiva Goswami, the word Srishti can here also refer to the creative process by which Lord Vishnu's yoga maya arranges the settings and situations of his pastimes. There is indeed no question of Mother Devaki being affected by the material aspect of maya.
Pitva mritam payastasya hita shesham gadabrita narayananga samsparsha pratilabdha madarshanaha te namaskritya govindam devakim pitarambalam mishatam sarvabhutanam yayurdhama divaukasam.
By drinking her nectarian milk, the remnants of what Krishna himself had previously drunk, the six sons touched the transcendental body of the Lord, Narayana, and this contact awakened them to their original identities. They bowed down to Govinda, Devaki, their father, and Balaram, and then as everyone looked on, they left for the abode of the demigods. Report. Lord Krishna remained as an infant with Devaki and Vasudev for only a very short time. First, the Lord appeared before them in his four-armed Vishnu form, and after hearing their prayers, he changed himself into an apparently ordinary infant for their pleasure. But to save Krishna from suffering his brother's fate, Vasudev at once removed him from Kamsa's prison. Just before Vasudev took him away, Mother Devaki suckled Krishna once so that he would not feel thirsty during the long trip to Nanda Vraja. This we learn from the commentary of Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur.
Tangrishva Devaki Devi Ritagamana Nirgamam Mene Suvismita Mayam Krishnasya Rachitam Nirpa.
Seeing her sons return from death and then depart again, saintly Devaki was struck with wonder, O King. She concluded that this was all simply an illusion created by Krishna.
Evam vidanya bhutani Krishnasya paramatmanaha Jayanyananta viryasya santyanantani bharata.
Sri Krishna, the Supreme Soul, the Lord of unlimited valor, performed countless pastimes just as amazing as this one, O descendant of Bharata. So this meter is a little more difficult. There's a pause after you do about 8 syllables or so. Shri Sutu Vacha Yaida Manushrinoti Shravayadva Muradis Charitam Amrita Kirtir Varnitam Vyasa Putrai Jagaragar Viralam Tadbhakta Satkarna Puram Bhagavati Krito Chitto Yati Takshema Dhamma. Sri Suta Goswami said, "This pastime enacted by Lord Murari, whose fame is eternal, totally destroys the sins of the universe and serves as the transcendental ornament for his devotees' ears. Anyone who carefully hears or narrates this pastime, as recounted by the venerable son of Vyasa, will be able to fix his mind in meditation on the Supreme Lord and attain to the all-auspicious kingdom of God." Purport. According to Srila Sridhar Swami, hearing the wonderful events of Lord Krishna's life destroys sins in a manner that is perfect, alum, because it is easy. Anyone can easily participate in this hearing, and those who become devoted to Krishna always enjoy wearing on their ears the ornaments of topics concerning him. Not only those who were present at the time of their occurrence, but also Shukadev Goswami, Suta Goswami, all who have heard since, and everyone in the universe who will hear in the future, all are blessed by the continuous recital of Lord Krishna's transcendental glories. Thus end the purports of the humble servants of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, to the 10th canto, 85th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled "Lord Krishna Instructs Vasudeva and Retrieves Devaki's Sons." Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Om Jnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Mena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I'll go through all the verses again, make some comments. Shukadeva Goswami continued, "After saying this, Lord Krishna and Lord Balaram, having been duly worshipped by Bali Maharaj, took the 6 sons and returned to Dwaraka, where they presented them to their mother." So after saying this refers to the end of this episode of Krishna and Balaram in the kingdom of Bali Maharaj. This is Sutala Loka. Sutala is one of the Bilaswarga. Bila means, well, it means down the hole, literally. Subterranean heavenly planets. So the third one down, Atal, Vito, Suto is the third one. So that's where Bali Maharaj stays. Of course, he was sent there by Vamanadev. I was thinking here, Krishna's visiting, but Vamanadev should be there this time too. He should still be there. Because this is, we're in the, you know, there's a Manvantara avatar who rules over the whole Manvantara. And the Manvantara avatar for this Manvantara is Vamanadev. So he's still ruling. Now Vamanadev, of course, he's the gatekeeper for Bali Maharaj. Now, there's an interesting story in one purport, Gopi Puranadan Prabhu quotes it in a purport in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita. It's in the story of Prahlad Maharaj, or the section where Narada Muni is glorifying Prahlad Maharaj. You know how in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, Narada is traveling around, and whenever he goes to some devotee, then he glorifies that devotee like anything. So he's glorifying Prahlad Maharaj, and when he's glorifying Prahlad Maharaj, he said, "Not only are you blessed, but even your grandson, Bali Maharaj, is blessed." So in the context of that, there's one purport, from the Prahlad Sanghita of the Skanda Purana, there's a story that's told there, that to say there were some sages in Dwaraka. Of course, Dwaraka is an eternal abode of the Lord. So there were sages who were living there, and they were being attacked by these daityas, demons. So a group of them, they went to find Lord Vamanadeva. They wanted to get help from the Lord to chase away these demons. So they went to Sutala Loka, where Lord Vamanadeva was to get his help. So when they got to the gate there, of course, Lord Vamanadeva was there, so they asked him, and he said, well, I'm not free to go anywhere. I'm sold out to my devotee, and you have to ask him. You have to ask Bali Maharaj. So they went to see Bali Maharaj, and Bali Maharaj said, no way. I'm not letting him go anywhere. And then the sages said, well, we're going to stay here, and we're going to fast until we die if you don't let him go. And Bali Maharaj said, basically, do what you want to do, but I'm not letting him go. He said, I'll never separate myself from the lotus feet of that Lord who was worshipped by Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, and all the demigods. So Lord Vamadeva didn't leave. He stayed there because he's fully surrendered to his pure devotee, Bali Maharaj. So now he's getting a visit from Krishna, and Bali Maharaj just got a visit from Krishna. So here it says, after saying this, so the last thing that would that Balaram and Krishna said to Bali Maharaj was, by my grace, these six, and then their names are given, will return to the abode of pure saints. The Sanskrit for that was yasyanti, that means to go, will go, sadgatim, sad means the devotees, saintly persons, gatim, the destination. So Krishna said they're going to be going to back home, back to Godhead, basically. So then it says, next verse, when she saw her lost children, goddess Devaki felt such affection for them that milk flowed from her breasts. She embraced them and took them on her lap, smelling their heads again and again. So this is an old custom, of course, smelling babies' heads. Somehow babies' heads smell so nice. Whatever, I don't know what it is. Purity, I guess. Everyone likes to smell babies' heads. Of course, they're soft and cute. And you know. So now she's referred to here as Devi. So Devaki, Devi. When I was reading this, I was thinking how in our Mataji's ladies' names, we have Devi Dasi. So I've always understood that the Devi belongs to the first part of the name. It's actually so-and-so Devi, and then Dasi of that. So therefore, you don't have Govinda Devi Dasi, you just have Govinda Dasi. Right? You leave out the Devi with Govinda, because it's not Govinda Devi, it's Govinda Dasi. So the Devi goes with the feminine part of the name. So here we have Devaki, Devi, and God. Devi, of course, means in relation to God, or it means godly or blessed, so on. So she's received her children. Of course, she's so happy. Her babies are there, and she's smelling their heads and taking them on her back, on her lap. Lovingly, she let her sons drink from her breast, which became wet with milk just by their touch. She was entranced by the same illusory energy of Lord Vishnu that initiates the creation of the universe. So this was interesting, of course, the commentary, because the Sanskrit, if you read it, Mohita Mayaya Vishnur, she is in Maya, bewildered by Vishnu's Maya, Mohita Mayaya Vishnur, is literally what it says, Yaya Shrishti Pravartate, by whom the creation takes place. The creation comes into being. So it seems like it was pretty straightforward what it says here. But that's not what Jiva Goswami, how he takes it, because he says, well, obviously, how can Devaki be in Maya? She can't be in Maya, that kind of Maya, Mahamaya. So he says, no, well, of course, in one sense, we can say, well, there's really only one energy, right? Krishna has one energy, one Maya. That Maya can play different roles. So really, the Maya that's being described here in kind of a covered way is the creation, because it says Srishti. So Srishti means creation. So the creation here means the creation of the pastime, or the unfolding of the pastime. So that's why she's in Yoga Maya, she's entranced by the unfolding of the pastime by Krishna's energy. Even though it says Vishnu, of course Vishnu is also a name for Krishna, because Krishna is Vishnu. Sometimes we may tend to forget that. I think they're two different people, Vishnu and Krishna. But they're the same person, Krishna manifesting himself in different ways. In the next two verses, by drinking her nectarian milk, the remnants of what Krishna himself had previously drunk, the six sons touched the transcendental body of the Lord, Narayana. And this contact awakened them to their original identities. Now, in the word for word here, I think it says, yes, it says, the Sanskrit is Atma. Pratilabdha, they gained, regained Atma of their original selves as demigods. That's what this refers to. They remembered that they were demigods. They were little babies, but they were remembering who they were by the touch of that milk. They bowed down to Govinda, Devaki, their father in Balaram, and then, as everyone looked on, they left for the abode of the demigods. So first, this nice point here about how they're getting prasad, because Krishna drank the milk from Devaki's breast, so now they're getting the prasad, they're getting the leftovers. And that prasad is the same as Narayana. When you touch prasad, prasad is Krishna. Krishna is not different from his prasad. So they're touching Narayan. Actually, we see in this series of verses, Krishna is called quite a few different names. So here, in the previous verse, he's referred to as Vishnu. In this verse, he's referred to as Narayana. He's also called Gadabrita. Gadabrita means one who holds the club. Gadabrita, one who holds. He's also called Gadagraja, but that actually means something different. There, Gada means Krishna has a half-brother named Gada, son of one of the other wives of Vasudeva. So he's called Gada. So Gada, Agraja, Agra means before, and Ja means born. So Krishna was born before, so he's older than Gada, than Gada. So that's why he's called Gadagraja. That name, incidentally, is used in that Shavidvaraha Hushtrakarai Sangstuta Purusha Pushu Nayat Karnapato Peta Chatu Nama Gadagraja. Those who are like dogs, hogs, camels, and asses, glorified persons who never listen to the glories of Lord Gadagraja. So that's another name for Krishna. So then here it says they left for the abode of the demigods. We just read that they were going to go back to Godhead, but now we're hearing that they went to the abode of the demigods. So that must be a stopover, a sojourn. Actually, I'll get a little English lesson here. Sojourn doesn't mean something that goes on and on and on and on. Sometimes devotees think our sojourn in the material world. Actually, sojourn means a stopover. You may fly to India and sojourn in London for a few days. So in one sense, yes, this is a sojourn, because ultimately we're going to go back to the spiritual world, but it doesn't mean something goes on and on and on. So anyway, so the demigods are going to, these personalities apparently are going to sojourn in their place. Wherever that is, they're sons of Marichi. I'm not sure where Marichi is, although Marichi is one of the seven, the Saptarishis. And the Saptarishis, we can see their place in the sky, the Big Dipper. That's their abodes are shining there. So maybe that's where they went. Maybe they're up there now. One of the stars in the Big Dipper. So the next verse. Tandrishtra Devaki Devi. So after seeing her son return from death, or seeing her sons return from death and then depart again, seeingly Devaki was struck with wonder, O King. She concluded that this was simply an illusion created by Krishna. So this is a real turnaround, this verse. Because she's completely into it, of course. She's so happy. She's gotten her sons back, and she's feeding them breast milk and smelling their heads. And then they leave, and then she says, oh, that was just an illusion. The whole thing was just Krishna tricking me. Now I got my senses back again. So now that's the way she's thinking. Then Sri Krishna, the Supreme Soul, the Lord of unlimited valor, performed countless pastimes just as amazing as this one, O descendant of Bharata. So this is Shukadev speaking to Parikshit Maharaj. Parikshit is descendant of Bharata, or Bharata. He is Bharata, descendant of Bharata. And then the last verse, Sri Suta Goswami said. So now we have Suta Goswami. Suta Goswami is speaking to the sages of Naimisharanya, relating what Shukadev Goswami is saying. We often have these several layers of speakers.
This pastime enacted by Lord Murari. So here we have another name of Krishna, Murari. Krishna is often called Murari. It's a very popular name of Krishna that we come across. It means the killer of the Mura demon. Now you may not remember who exactly Krishna kills so many demons. So who is the Mura demon? The Mura demon was hiding in the moat around the castle of Narakasura. When Krishna went to rescue the 16,100 princesses taken by Narakasura, so he had a big fight. First he had to go through this contraption that was like whirling blades, and then he destroyed that, and then Mura was waiting and hiding in the moat, and he came out, and he had five heads. And first he threw his trident at Krishna. He was very angry. Of course, demons are always angry. He threw his trident at Krishna, and Krishna destroyed that. He shot two arrows at that, so he broke it in three parts, the trident. And then he threw his mace at Krishna, and Krishna destroyed that. I forget whether it was his bow or with his club, but he smashed that thing to pieces. And then so Mura was so angry that he just raised his hands and started running, and he was screaming out of all five of his mouths. You can imagine what that sounded like. So he just went running after Krishna, just so angry. So Krishna just took his chakra and cut off his head. So that was the end of that. Sometimes Krishna ends these things pretty quickly. So that's why he's called Murari. This word appears in a famous verse by Lord Brahma, Samashritaye Padapalavapalavam Mahatpadam Punyinusho Murare Bhavambudir Vatsapadam Padam 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 Yadvipadam Natesham. If we take shelter of the lotus feet of Murari, then all the miseries of this material world, they shrink down like the water in the hoofprint of a calf and easily can cross over. So what else was said? Actually, when I read this, for some time I was thinking about, what does this mean here? It says, this pastime enacted by Lord Murari, whose fame is eternal, totally destroys the sins of the universe. So I think that's the kind of thing you read by it, just keep going. But I'm an editor, so I tend not to be able to do that. I get stuck on everything. So I said, what does that mean? The pastime destroys the sins of the universe. So first I thought, well, does that mean when Krishna enacted the pastime, that it destroyed all the sins of the universe? I thought, well, I don't know, I suppose that could be, but is that really what it means? So I thought, then again, to destroy a sin, what does it mean to destroy a sin? What is a sin? Is it a thing? A sin seems to be an activity, right? You perform, you kill somebody, so that action of killing someone, that's the sin. So how can you destroy that? It's already happened. So to destroy the sin, I actually looked around here and doing some searches, and I found this word agha, which is the Sanskrit here, agha. So agha means sin. Another word for sin is papa. So papa doesn't always translate it as a sin. He often translates it as the reaction to the sin. So to me, that makes more sense. That when it says destroyed the sin, it means he destroys the reactions to the sin. And this we find here and there in different places in Prabhupada's books. Even though the word agha is used or the word papa is used, which literally means the sin, it actually means the reaction to the sin. Just like the word karma, karma means the action, but it also means the reaction. We use the word karma to mean the reaction, but actually the word karma means the action itself. So anyway, I thought, well, so Krishna is destroying, but does that just mean that when the pastime is being enacted, then it destroyed all the sins of the universe? And even then I thought, well, what happens if you destroy all the sinful reactions of the universe? All the universe just stops? No more karma? Everything stops? But then as I was looking at the purport, I thought, well, it seems to be there, you know, Sridhar Swami. He's talking about hearing, because the verse also talks about hearing. Although in the word for word, the way it's listed here, it's that the pastime itself destroys the sin. But of course we know that the pastime and the reciting of the pastime, it's the same thing. Right? That's the point. That whether Krishna is enacted, or the pastime is being enacted right now, or Shukadeva Goswami is reciting that pastime, it actually has the same power. There's no difference between the recitation of the pastime and the pastime itself, just as there's no difference between Krishna and Krishna's name. So the reciting of the pastime has the power to destroy the reactions to the sins of the whole universe. So then again, I'm stuck on this. Well, what does that mean? When Shukadeva Goswami or when Prabhupada is reciting some pastime, does that mean all the sins of the universe are being destroyed? So I think that's answered at the end of the purport here, that the sins of whoever is reciting and whoever is hearing at that moment are being destroyed, no matter where they are in the universe. In other words, it's not restricted to a specific time or place. But anywhere in the universe, if someone repeats this pastime, they're in a sense reenacting the pastime, and therefore anybody who hears, such an auspicious situation is created that the reactions are destroyed. So it's so powerful, and here it's described how easy it is to become purified. You just have to hear these pastimes and you become purified. There's a wonderful verse by Sridhar Swami, Srimad Bhagavata Bidasura Turus Tarankura Sajjani. I won't recite the whole thing. It's actually Sridhar Swami's first verse in his commentary on the Srimad Bhagavatam. So one of he describes how the Bhagavatam, like a metaphor, how it's like a tree and it has 18 roots or 18,000 leaves and so on. So, and it's surrounded by a moat of the devotees, bhakti, and the nice metaphor he gives. But one of the things he says about the Bhagavatam is that it's sulabha. That means it's so auspicious, but it's also sulabha, which means very easily attained. All you have to do is pick up the book. It's right there. Of course, by Prabhupada's mercy, it didn't used to be so easy, actually. You have to go search out holy people who knew the Bhagavatam and who could recite it. But now, of course, Prabhupada made it available all over the world. So it's sulabha, that powerful entity that destroys all sinful reactions, is so easily available to everyone. Well, it's getting late, but I just want to mention a couple of things about Lord Shiva. Since this is his day, Shivaratri literally means the night of Shiva. It makes sense that he was, I don't know if he appeared at night, but that's the way it's stated. We know how he appeared in this pastime of Lord Brahma was angry at the Kumaras because they didn't want to get married, have children. So he became angry and Lord Shiva burst out through his forehead. So we have so many nice pastimes of Lord Shiva in the Bhagavatam. Especially in the fourth canto, we had the Daksha Yajna, the cursing of Lord Shiva, everything that went on there. And there's a really nice, actually this morning, what Krishna Keshava was reading, that's when Lord Brahma takes all the demigods, because, of course, as it unfolds, Lord Shiva's hordes go and destroy the sacrifice, really create havoc and cut off Daksha's head and smash different people's teeth and heads and all kinds of things and punch out their eyes. And so they really made a scene. So then the demigods decided, well, they went to Lord Brahma. And Lord Brahma said, well, you can't offend someone like Lord Shiva. What are you thinking? Let's go see Lord Shiva. So they went there. There's a long section that describes what Kailas looks like, how opulent it is, and the birds are singing and the animals are there and all the trees. Long description, quite a few verses. And then they get to this banyan tree, which is whatever it is, 8,000 yojans or something. Huge banyan tree that Lord Shiva sits under. And there it's completely quiet and still. Everywhere else the birds are singing and all this. But Lord Shiva, when he meditates, he wants it quiet. So there's absolutely no noise, completely still. Of course, the only sound is Lord Shiva's preaching. When they arrive there, Lord Shiva is sitting. It describes his posture. It says, his right leg is on his left thigh, his left hand is on his left thigh, and his hand is raised in the, what is it called? Actually, it's called Virasana, his seat, the way he's sitting, Virasana. And then he has the preaching mudra, and he's preaching. And, sages are there, and especially Narada is there. And they're discussing, of course, Krishna Katha. So that's what Lord Shiva likes to do. He has this distasteful business of having to associate with the most wretched people. But in his heart, of course, Rama Rama, he chants. He's devoted to the Lord. He has his own sampradaya, the Rudra sampradaya, Vaishnavanam Ita Shambhu. He's the greatest of Vaishnavas. So that's how we, in these prayers that, I don't know how much you picked up on this morning, but Lord Brahma, he glorifies him as if he's talking to Lord Vishnu. There's no difference in these prayers. The same thing happens where's the other place I'm thinking? Anyway, there's another place. The same things happen. I think the demigods are speaking to Lord Brahma. Yes, the demigods. And they also, the same thing, they refer to him as the super soul, the cause of all causes, and all these superlatives. So Prabhupada just, I don't think in the context of this one, but in another place, he just makes the point. He says, actually, when Lord Shiva is glorified like this, these prayers are really being offered to Lord Vishnu. Because Lord Shiva is actually Lord Vishnu. He's just playing a role. He's in touch with Durga. And that's why he's a little bit colored, you can say. Otherwise, he is Lord Vishnu, so he can be glorified that way. Actually, Prabhupada says he's a Shaktyavesh avatar. So he's not usually considered Shaktyavesh. But if you think, the word means that he's invested with the Shakti of Vishnu, so he can be called that. Whereas literally, he's a Guna avatar. So Lord Shiva is so powerful, the pastime in the eighth canto, the churning of the milk ocean, of course, he drank that poison. So that halahala poison was so powerful. They were churning the ocean, and the first thing that came out wasn't nectar, it was poison. And this poison was so strong, it was going to destroy the whole universe. The demigods and they were panicking. We can't stop this. It's going to destroy it. We're going to be killed. The whole universe is going to be destroyed. This poison is so powerful. So they went to Lord Brahma, and Lord Brahma said, ask Lord Shiva. So they went to Lord Shiva. When they asked Lord Shiva, Lord Shiva spoke several verses about how it's so important to be kind, basically, and compassionate, and to give one's own life for others. There's one of his verses is like that. One should be ready to give his own life, prana, for others. And at the end he says, yes, I'll do it. And then it says, and Durga Devi gave him permission. I thought it was interesting. He says, I'm going to do it, but then it says, and Durga says, yes, you can do it. It's sort of like he was also sort of asking her permission. Because in one sense you could say, well, he didn't know what was going to happen. This is really deadly poison. So as he drank the poison, some of it dripped out of his hand. He put it in his palm and some of it dripped out. And then poisonous creatures were created by that. Scorpions and poisonous snakes and so on. So I recently came across this list of dangerous creatures, you know, poisonous creatures. So there's one creature that lives in the sea whose poison is so powerful that one sting is enough to kill 20 people. So, you know, talk about poisonous. So imagine all this poison, that's how, that gives you an idea, is concentrated into this, what Lord Shiva was drinking. So he took it. He said, I have to, you know, save people, I have to save the world, save the universe, I have to drink it. And he drank it, and of course what happened, it said that the poison, to show its potency, kind of to show off, it made a blue line in his throat. It had to have some effect. Lord Shiva is so powerful, but it had to have some effect, so it made this blue line. And now, of course, that blue line is considered to be an ornament. He's called Nilakanta, the blue-throated one. So there's another indication of his great power, the Lord. There's one name for Krishna, which I can't think of right now, which it's kind of the idea is that you can never get over on him. Even if you say something that's offensive, it turns out to be good. Just like our acharyas, they twist things around. So you can never really offend Krishna because he's unlimitedly powerful. So even Lord Shiva even took the most poisonous thing, then it became an ornament to him. So Lord Shiva, there's a lot. Lord Shiva appears quite a few places in the Bhagavatam. And we always get the sense, of course, that he's very grave and completely devoted to the Lord and extremely compassionate to the suffering living entity.
So, we'll stop here. Let me just read this last verse again. It's so nice. Sutta Goswami said, "This pastime enacted by Lord Murari, whose fame is eternal, totally destroys the sins of the universe and serves as a transcendental ornament for his devotees' ears. Anyone who carefully hears or narrates this pastime as recounted by the venerable son of Vyasa will be able to fix his mind in meditation on the Supreme Lord and attain to the all-auspicious kingdom of God." Tat Kshema Dhamma, says, his Kshema, auspicious Dhamma, personal abode. Questions, comments, realizations?
I was just curious, the sages that went to get Vamanadeva and they fasted, they died?
Well, they said they were going to do it, and I didn't get to see the rest of the story, so there was just one, a couple of verses were quoted from this Prahlad Samhita, so I have to look it up in the Skanda Purana. It comes from the Skanda Purana. The rest of the story wasn't told. Maybe they decided, he's not going to give in, so it was Durvasa Muni, so he didn't fast till death because he's still around. Maybe he was just mad. He said, I'm going to kill myself.
Thank you for the nice lecture, Nagaraj Prabhu. When Mother Devaki smelled the head of the children, it's a type of samskara. Actually, it's a samskara.
Uh-huh.
The parents, when they go traveling, the mother or the father, they come back and they smell the children's head. The child can the memory comes back to remember the parents.
It's considered auspicious.
In the Vedic culture, yeah.
Mm. That's nice.
There's a similar pastimes in Bhavan Purana about Lakshmi Devi. She was in Vaikuntha thinking that my husband, Vamandev, left, but he never came back. Generally, Lord leaves and he goes to give mercy and supposed to come back. So, Vamandev did not return. Then Lakshmi Devi was wondering, what happened to my husband? He never does that late. So she came to material world, and on the way she met Narad Muni. Of course, Narad Muni revealed what happened in Sutala planet. So she came there and she was allowed to come inside to talk to the Lord and says, my dear husband, now time is up. You are so late, away from the home. Let's go home. And the Vamandev says, I'm sorry. When a soul completely surrendered to me, I get purchased by them. So I am sorry, I got locked in his heart. I can't go. So then she was overwhelmed. He said, how this happened? So he narrated the whole story. And then after that, Lakshmi Devi was very nicely. In calendar, you'll see there's a day worshipping Boli Maharaj and Lakshmi Puja. Same day,
mm-hmm.
every year.
Mm-hmm.
So Lakshmi Devi is very intelligent. Of course, she's a wife of Lord. So she immediately arranged a big arrangement to do puja to Boli Maharaj. And because she did that puja to Boli Maharaj, to please him, because who has purchased my husband is very powerful devotee. So since that time, Boli Maharaj was very happy, and Boli Maharaj welcomed her to stay with the Lord for a while until the Indra's, because Boli Maharaj is going to be the next Indra. She will go there, and then Lord will depart to the Vaikuntha with her. So she is still there also with Vamandev.
Just one thing about Lord Shiva I wanted to mention. You may have seen there's a painting of Lord Shiva, or actually of Durga, ferocious Durga, and at her feet there's some personality. Well, that's Lord Shiva. And the idea is that, Prabhupada explains it somewhere, that Durga, I don't know the whole context of the pastime, but Durga was mad, angry, and destroying everything, and she had to be stopped. So Lord Shiva went and basically did dandavats in front of her to stop her so she wouldn't destroy the whole universe. So I was thinking there's also kind of a symbolism there that Lord Shiva is the only person that can control Durga. So he can control the material energy. He's completely in control of the material energy. So sometimes she gets angry and he has to step in and say, calm down. All right, let's stop here. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.